It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Pittsburgh region is blanketed yet again with snow. For some, that means navigating slushy, slippery roads. Others might already have plowed streets. Chris Hornstein is the acting director of public works for the city of Pittsburgh. Chris, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, give us a sense at any moment, roughly about how many plows does the city have access to?
Right now, at any moment, the city has access to roughly 100 plows. Some of those are in various stages of repair.
Is that enough, do you think? And how often do you have to deploy the full fleet that is available to you?
Well, we never deploy the full fleet that's available to us. And the reason why is a lot of times in a snow event, we have issues that come up, maintenance issues, trucks get flat tires, hoses break, that requires us to kind of take them out of service and bring them back in. And so in those instances, we kind of redeploy a spare truck while the other truck is being repaired so we can keep a driver on the road. And so that's why typically the max level that we set is about, 75 trucks, so we can always keep some in reserve so we can always be moving on the streets. Is that enough? Is a very good question. We're still kind of working through that protocol. I think that that's a great, it's a great start. A lot of it also depends on, the type of weather event that we're having.
Do you have enough drivers?
Drivers are always a concern. Salting and plowing is, that's a dangerous task. We recently had an accident involving a plow driver where he just lost control of the vehicle. Fortunately, the driver is fine and he didn't get injured, but we do have the capability, if the snow event's tough, that we can always reach out to, private contractors if it kind of gets out of hand where we, the city, don't have enough resources to handle it. So that those are options available to us.
Are the drivers prepared? You mentioned that one accident. I believe there's been like two accidents this month. Is that an anomaly? Are the drivers prepared? What about the vehicles themselves?
Our fleet is very old, and I'll be frank with you about that. That is some of the challenges that we have to work through. So right now, one of the things that we're doing is, preparing a new vehicle acquisition program to get our fleet aged appropriately. Some of those accidents can be anomaly. We do have protocols in place where if drivers aren't comfortable or if they're driving at night, we can't allow them to have an additional person in the truck for safety. And some of it is, honestly, the city is challenging. This is a challenging topography. It's in some cases a challenging, road network that we have to treat. So, those things all kind of factor into play. Fortunately, though, a lot of our drivers are very, very experienced. And we have a pretty good training program that we're developing that's, helping us bring those less experienced drivers along.
On average, how long would you say a Pittsburgher should have to wait for their street to be plowed?
I would say that, based on what we're tracking right now with our new technology that we're implementing, I would say, from the time a first flake falls that they should expect truck to be plowed in 24 hours. I believe that's a pretty reasonable expectation for people. We do have 1,500 lane miles to treat roughly. So, we average about 5 miles an hour when we're in a plowing situation. So it does go pretty slow.
Do you sort of assess meeting that goal of about 24 hours? And what do you think keeps you from meeting the goal if you do?
Yes, we do. We constantly assess throughout the event. We're taking a lot of intelligence in from the community. We always encourage residents to use 311 so we can track those requests. And we also try to coordinate those activities with our Environmental Services Bureau for garbage pickup. The challenges that come within, as we work through the technology, plowing at night is difficult. I always like to say our guys like to say it's kind of like flying in outer space in some cases. You've got a low light situation. You've got a driver that's trying to rely on their knowledge of a route. Significant vehicle failures can also delay response. That is probably our biggest challenge, if I have to just be frank, that when vehicles and equipment go down, we can lose a significant amount of time. We can lose, an hour or 2 hours, rerouting a truck to a driver to get them back on the road, salting and plowing. And so when that happens, you know, that does delay our response. That does, you know, affect our ability to get everywhere we need to get.
WPXI reported on some issues with the salt spreader system that was installed a couple years ago. Doesn't drop enough salt, particularly in steep areas, according to that report. And the salt spreader doesn't engage until it gets to a certain speed. What is your office, your department doing to address that?
We're working with our vendors. We've got a really talented group of mechanics in our heavy equipment division. I think they're kind of our unsung heroes of our salt operations. And they're very well versed in some of those issues. So, you know, we are reaching out with our vendor to kind of clarify some of those issues that we've identified. You know, we changed our salt level that the spreaders were set at to give the drivers more flexibility to put more salt down when they felt it was appropriate. So we kind of put a little bit more control in the driver's hands so they could address things situationally.
So is it a matter of a new system or reprogramming the current system or what?
I don't think it's an issue of a new system at all. I think the system works. I think we need to work out the kinks with the vendor. You know, some of those kinks, our trucks are old. So that does present some challenges for the vendor's equipment. But, you know, our vendor has been active with us, and we're gathering. It does require us to gather some pretty detailed information for them. So that, as I mentioned, like that's our heavy equipment division's responsibility. The challenge for us is with all this constant snow, it's very difficult for us to kind of, you know, gather the necessary information for the vendor so they can kind of help us solve some of these problems.
Mm-hmm. What do you need to improve plowing and treating the streets in the city?
The first thing is we do need to get our fleet younger. The average age of our vehicle for winter operations is about 10.3 years, which is a really old lifespan for a truck. I mean, this is very hard on those pieces of equipment. We have a significant amount of downtime every time there's an event. So the very first thing that needs to happen is we need to make a very consistent investment in modernizing our fleet. I think the second thing that we need to do is, you know, there are staff in public works that are capable of driving, that have expressed interest in driving. And we work with them to develop a more robust driver training program to help them get acclimated to, you know, driving in adverse conditions and learning how to do it safely and appropriately. And I think most of our guys do. We have a lot of experienced guys, but we got to get that experience in the hands of more people, which I think we can do, and everybody's receptive to that. But it does take some time for us to kind of build that training program.
Chris Hornstein is the Acting Director of Public Works for the City of Pittsburgh. Chris, thanks so much for your time.
No, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh is about to see construction of the region's largest marijuana production operation in the north side. Good Blend, Pennsylvania, is building the facility that will eventually conduct marijuana research with the University of Pittsburgh, thanks to a $3 million grant from Good Blend. Elizabeth Conway is the regional president of Good Blend, Pennsylvania. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
The facility size already sets it apart, 120,000 square feet. So the lease has been signed. What comes next? When do you expect to begin growing, the research, et cetera?
The next steps really are around permitting. We anticipate breaking ground soon so that we can build out the infrastructure and get started with the plants in the proverbial ground in the indoor facilities by early summer.
Good Blend is a subsidiary of Georgia-based Parallel, which has been around for, I believe, about 5 years. How does Good Blend plan to establish itself here in the Pittsburgh area?
By locating the grow process facility here, as well as our first retail location in Pittsburgh. We just thought that that was important. It was important for economic development. It was important because the workforce here is really ready to work. You've got some unused sites that were perfect for a large-scale operation like this. And so Pittsburgh was our choice. It also clearly was the right choice because of our partnership with the University of Pittsburgh.
You mentioned that the workforce is ready to work. About how many people will be employed by the facility? Local hires?
We anticipate we'll start with several hundred, and local hiring is absolutely a priority for us. And we prioritize hiring locally because those are the people who care about the product and what we're putting out there. We're also very interested in the social equity efforts, ensuring that the legacy of over-policing minority communities does not persist and lock folks out of from these communities in this high potential industry.
Medical marijuana has been dispensed in Pennsylvania for 3 years now. What do you think still needs to be researched about that product, or those products, I should say?
Well, I would love to have the federal government allow research on medicinal cannabis just because we see how patients use these products. We see them use them as replacement for addictive pain therapies that they're getting, and cannabis is not addictive. So a replacement for some of those heavy-duty opioids, if we had federally sponsored research on that, what an amazing gift that would be. We're going to be doing some of that research with the University of Pittsburgh. Our initial clinical studies are around sickle cell disease, which is an incredibly painful disease, and also in intractable pain. Mm-hmm. So some help from the federal government on allowing that research to go forward without as many restrictions would be great.
You mentioned hundreds of jobs. So could this be a new source of revenue, bring a boost to this region's economy still suffering, just like so many around the country, from the pandemic's recession?
You know, when you look at like even the tax revenue that has come in annually in states like Washington and Colorado, it's in the hundreds of millions. And that doesn't even count as much as 1.5 times that amount of revenue that comes in with money infused from builders, plumbers, electricians, machinists, engineers, and mechanics. You know, so in other words, the pipes that go into the industry like this. There are all these collateral impacts. And we would also see, if Pennsylvania acts soon enough, especially to move from just strictly medicinal, that 40% of Pennsylvanians will soon be a short drive from some of the legal adult use cannabis states. And we know from other states that people will cross state borders to buy, further boosting our potential in-state revenue and jobs if we could be the first to market for something like that in this region.
Elizabeth Conway is the regional president of Good Blend Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for your time.
Kevin, it's been a pleasure today.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Sharon G. Flake might be Pittsburgh's best-known author of young adult fiction, including novels such as the classic The Skin I'm In. Flake's new novel was a companion to that 1998 bestseller. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll has this profile.
It was more than 20 years ago, recalls Andrea Davis Pinkney. She's a book editor based in New York who one day reached into a pile of unsolicited manuscripts and, at random, pulled out one mailed from Pittsburgh.
And the first thing I read was, the first time I seen her, I got a bad feeling inside. Not like I was in danger or nothing. Just like she was somebody I should steer clear of. To tell the truth, she was a freak like me. The kind of person folks can't help but tease.
That was how Davis Pinkney discovered Sharon Flake. Those are the original opening lines of Flake's debut novel, The Skin I'm In. It's narrated by Malika Madison, a smart, dark-skinned black girl who was bullied at her new middle school. The book has sold some 1.7 million copies worldwide, and it launched Flake's career as an award-winning author. Davis Pinkney says it also broke new ground for the late 1990s.
No one was talking about issues of complexion, race, identity, self-esteem in girls.
Davis Pinkney spoke at an online event celebrating Flake's latest novel. Titled The Life I'm In, it's from the perspective of Charlize Jones, the girl who bullied Malika in The Skin I'm In. Charlize at 16 is an orphan with serious troubles of her own. Expelled from multiple schools, she's sent down south to live with relatives, but instead is ensnared by a sex trafficker. At the book event, Flake read Char's narration, which picks up after a phone call with Malika early in the book and references Char's older sister, Juju.
She don't even say bye. My eyes close and I pretend I'm back in my room, sitting at my desk coloring. My mother's downstairs cooking red beans and rice, her favorite. My dad's in the bathroom banging a hammer on something he want to fix, but probably don't got the skills to fix. Juju is somewhere partying, like she done when they was alive.
Flake grew up in Philadelphia. In 1973, she enrolled at the University of Pittsburgh and has been here ever since. After college, she worked as a counselor for teens at a foster placement agency before returning to Pitt for a public relations job. She also continued her own writing, spurred in part by the birth of her daughter.
Because once she came, then I started writing and talking verbal stories at first about dark-skinned girls to her. And then I just got very disciplined and focused about writing.
The Skin I'm In, her first book, was published when Flake was 42. It's now reached generations. Brittany Thurman, a former assistant of Flake's, read it as a teenager.
I could connect with this main character, and that's not something that I really saw in the books that I had around me or the books that I read. And it's why, you know, I really gravitate towards her work, being able to see a character that represents myself and not have to place who I am into a story. It's already there.
Audrey Morrell is acting dean of Pitt's Honors College. She knew Flake when they both worked at Pitt.
I gave copies of The Skin I'm In to my nieces. I sent them all copies when that book first came out. And they're now adults and, you know, professionals and working full time. And so I heard recently from one of them, she said that was one of my favorite books.
Flake's personal appearances are widely in demand. Librarians like her too. Andrea McNeil, Youth Services Librarian at the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh's Homewood branch, appreciates that Flake's books cover everything from dating to gun violence.
I tend to steer readers to her work because it is so relevant.
To that point, Flake's latest novel isn't just a chance to revisit her iconic characters from a new angle. She says that with its dive into human trafficking, The Life I'm In is her most challenging book yet.
I wanted people to see that these were children, that there are a lot of children that are being impacted, and to show their humanity.
It's also a story of female solidarity.
It became a story about girls and women, right, lifting one another up, right, in difficult times. It became a story about resilience and second chances.
I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.